You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
Welcome into the Pine Tar Podcast. I am David Leskey, and I'm sitting alongside virtually Clint Scholes, and we're here to talk about some first place Royals. They are leading the division in the American League Central, and if they hold on to win one of the next two games, and by the time you listen, they may have already won this, they will be in first place later in the year than they have in any season since 1985. This is territory we haven't been in. So let's soak this in. Let's bring in the aforementioned Clint Scholes. What's going on, man? How are you?
I am doing great. I'm watching a little Sean Manaea as we speak. And I'm enjoying the Royals being in first place yet again. And for, you know, it's been a dream. Every day they're in first place, it makes me that much happier at home.
No, I'm with you completely. It is the most fun I've had watching baseball in my adult life. And, you know, I'm 29, so my adult life isn't that long, but the last time they had real playoff chances this late in the year was 2003. You can talk last year, but they never had a chance last year. Let's be real. So, you know, you're getting into Billy Butler lined a ball. Sorry. I'm doing the awkward play-by-play on a podcast of a game you've already finished. But, yeah, you're getting into some territory, like I said, that we haven't seen before. That, you know, it's been 11 years since the Royals had a playoff spot within their reach that they held in August. That's ridiculous, first of all. But we'll let history slide for now. And this is great. They're playing good baseball. One thing that I said on I think it was TJ Carpenter's show on 810 the other day was it's almost like the Royals were the awkward teenager. And then about 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, they came out of their shell and Ned Yost started to make good managerial decisions, and Dayton Moore made a trade to pick up a power bat in Josh Willingham, and it was just like these guys figured out who they were, and they kind of became a good team. And you know, we always joke, Dayton Moore says, one day we're going to wake up and be good, and I think maybe that's what happened. I think maybe one day they woke up and they were good, and no, it probably shouldn't work that way, and there's a lot of complaints that I can have about that, and I think you can too, Clint, but for now, we're watching first place baseball, and as we're speaking, again, you'll know the outcome of this when you're listening. But the Rays are up on the Tigers, 4-2 through 5.5 innings, and man, this is fun. This is some really fun baseball to be watching.
It is, and you mentioned that growing up and seeing it, and it kicked in late in the year. This is what the Oakland A's used to do every season. They had a young ball club. And about July or August, they would just kick it in. And I think that's what we're kind of seeing with the Royals and Tigers, is that the Royals, on the surface, when you grade out age, the Royals are, what, the second oldest team in the league? Yeah, next to the Yankees. But when you look at the key contributors here, they're a younger team than the Tigers, and it's just kind of amazing. They've reeled them in. They've passed them. And it's like, these are the young guys. They've got the late kick. And we're going to see if the Tigers can find that veteran savvy to run them back down.
Yeah, the Tigers need to find, I hope they don't, but if they want to win a third straight AL Central title, is it three straight for them now?
Yeah, I believe
three
so.
Three or four, either way.
Three or four.
If they want to keep winning American League Central titles, we'll leave it at that. They're going to need to find that second, third, fourth gear that, you know, maybe they don't have. Maybe they are just darn tuckered out, because that is not a young team. They have a bad bullpen. They have bad defense.
And they got starters breaking down.
And, Anibal Sanchez is on the disabled list. Justin Verlander, did he go on the DL?
I don't think he's on the DL yet, but I read today that he was going to test out the shoulder. I think later today or tomorrow. So that doesn't sound good. Doesn't sound like he's going to be back for at least another start, at least one.
Well, and here's the question, though. Do the Tigers get better by bringing somebody up from the minors the way Justin Verlander's pitched this year?
Yeah, they might. I mean,
they very well may. It's, I don't know. Although Buck Farmer isn't the answer, I'll tell you that much.
No, it looked like Verlander kind of righted the ship for a little bit, but then quickly went back down. And so David Price is a godsend. That trade might be a godsend in that at least he can keep their head above water.
Yeah.
If they didn't have him, then, which Smiley's no huge drop off, I don't think, but it is keeps their head a little bit above water.
Yeah, it's that was a big move for them, because can you imagine, like you said, Drew Smiley is no slouch, but man, David Price is certainly not a slouch, and being able to have Price, Scherzer, and Porcello at the top of a rotation, that you still look at that and you go, all right, well, Sanchez is hurt and Verlander isn't Verlander and he's hurt anyway. But they're still pretty darn good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But they might not have the best player in the division anymore. So
yeah.
So it's gonna be hard for him to run down. I mean, Alex Gordon, according to Fangraphs, is the best positional player in the league.
Yeah, we'll talk about that with our guest Nate Bucati here coming up in a little bit. But I'll touch on that too. He's not the best player in the league, but he's having a darn good season. And I went on the Baseball Tonight pregame show, and we talked about that a little bit. And what I said was it shows maybe not that he's the best player in the league, but Alex Gordon is just a really, really good baseball player. And he is so good in every facet of the game that it this year it's shown up with a little bit of a down year on the defensive metrics for Mike Trout. It's allowed Alex Gordon to have the highest wins above replacement in baseball.
Yeah, and it just... it quantified every team needs one excellent player having an excellent season. Baseball is not an individual game, but you need at least one individual to excel. And Alex is doing that. And it's amazing to see the guys to remember where he was in 2010 and to where he is now. And to have the confidence to say he's going to dominate. And now in 2014, yeah, he's not dominating offensively, but you factor in everything and he is dominating.
Yeah.
And it's so fun to watch, and you feel so good for a guy who, you know, has grinded and worked as hard as a person humanly can work to get to this point.
Yeah. He's something special. I've talked about this. I might consider working out a little extension with him, for a couple of reasons. I think he would be willing to backload some money to help out the Royals to stay competitive next season as well. And so that might be a move that the Royals could make to keep Alex Gordon here a little bit longer and also to help out their team next year.
Yeah, it would be a savvy move. I don't know how well his agent would be, how much Casey Close would be interested in that, but if they're smart, it would be now to renegotiate it, because Alex is only 30. I mean, he's only 30. By the time his option is executed, he's going to be going into his age 33 season, which that's not a terrible negotiating ploy for a guy who keeps himself in such good shape. But if he could, you know, maybe add 3 years.
So he's scheduled to make 12 and a half next year. And he's got a $12.5 million option in 2016. So, you got $25 million right there that you've got to have on the contract for sure. And you're probably going to add another $12.5 million at least. I would consider coming to him this offseason and saying, "Hey, we'd like to guarantee your 2016 option, give you two more years with an option in 2019, and maybe you'd knock the 2015 money down to $8 million, $8 or $9 million, and see if he'd be willing to do that." And like they did with Guthrie, put that money on an option.
That's
or an option buyout, I guess.
Yeah, if that would be a good idea on the Royals' take, if I'm Casey Close, I say I want 3 guaranteed years.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That. 3 guaranteed on top of 16.
Oh, so you give him 18, 17, 18, and 19. I would consider that too. And you maybe say, okay,
Just to, because why? What's the point of him renegotiating? They know he's going to be in good shape at the end of age 32. He's at that point. Him getting a 2-year deal is going to be, I would think, pretty simple. So give me a three. Give me a three-year deal and lock it in, and then maybe a team option for that fourth. And that's where the Royals would actually have to think about it because, you know, at 35, 36, you're getting up there in age. I'm just looking at it from Casey Close's perspective.
No, you're right. You just wonder what Gordon will say because...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think Alex would... I think he would lock in for a long time. I think he and Billy both are somebody that you can renegotiate with. And then it's just a matter of, I think the Royals would definitely love to renegotiate with Alex. I'm not so sure about Billy.
The thing about Billy is I think they'd be happy to have him for $5 million next year, which I don't know if that gets it done the way he's played at first base because he's now he's shown that he's an option for National League teams.
Yeah, I think if you're Billy's agent, you tell him here we want to get we want to get at least that eight that we made, and give us some guaranteed some incentives of you're not going to DH me so much. If I were them, I would put in something into the. It's hard to put that in, but if you can put it in the opposite, right? So with Jonathan Papelbon, he has the option that if he finishes so many games, 50 games or whatever, that he gets a kick in, a bonus. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they can do it in the reverse and say, here, if I play less than this many games at first base, I want this. And
right,
as far as there's no clause that I'm not injured, you know, as obviously any kind of injury supersedes that. If I'm Billy, that's what I would want.
Well, if I'm the Royals, if I'm running this team, and I'm not because I'm talking to you, and no offense, but if I was running this team, I wouldn't give you the time of day. I'd still call you every day. I would shop Eric Hosmer. I would probably go ahead and do is say, look, to Billy, we want you back next year. You had a rough season. It's been a great body of work. What if we gave you $5 million guaranteed, and you're really sure that that was just your down year? We're going to give you $5 million in incentives. You get to this number, and we're not going to make it home runs at bat completely, and I don't know if you can still do that anymore, actually, but I think it's just awards you can't incentivize. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you get 600 at bats. Not only do you get another $5 million, but your 2016 contract is guaranteed for $11 million. Something along those lines. And then I go out there and I say, all right, who wants Eric Hosmer? Because the fact of the matter is, for what he provides, he's getting expensive. And, I mean, James Loney's a nice player, but I think the Rays made a mistake giving him 3 years, $21 million. And that's Eric Hosmer's kind of on the James Loney path right now. So you look around, and the deal that I've been trumpeting is see if the Marlins want to bring him home. He's a marketable guy. Put him at first base, fill that hole. They probably won't be able to keep Stanton and Marcelo Zuna. Maybe see if the Marlins would be willing to give up Marcelo Zuna for Eric Hosmer and center a package around those two. The Royals get their right fielder. The Marlins get their first baseman. The Royals sign Billy Butler. He plays first base, and everybody goes home happy.
No, I agree. I'd be looking at right fielders. I'd be looking at fifth starters. I'd be looking all over the place. I think there's a player out there. I'd be looking at Eric Hosmer and saying, can you play right field, kid? I mean,
well, that's something they could do. They talk about flexibility. If Eric Hosmer could play right field, you could even re-sign Willingham and have a rotation of those three guys playing almost every day with Eric Hosmer in right field most days, getting some work at first base some days, and... I think that could actually be something that would work.
Yeah, I don't know how much they're pressing Eric to come back, but it doesn't seem like they're pressing much.
No, it doesn't. And hand injuries, I said this before, I broke my hand when I was in high school. And I broke it in, I want to say late May. And, you know, the high school season ends. It was summer league. But the summer league season ends in mid-July. It's a pretty early end of the season. I didn't play another game that year. Hand injuries are tricky business. So it would not shock me if we just don't see Eric Hosmer again this year. I think we will, but it wouldn't surprise me if we don't.
No, it wouldn't be. And if I was the Royals, with the way this team's performed, the way Billy's hit without him, I wouldn't be pushing to get the guy back. I mean, I just wouldn't. The Royals had two kind of big holes offensively, and they still got other holes that aren't performing well. But Moustakas and Hosmer were a drain on this offense. I think as much as the Royals say something different, I think their attitude is a drain in the clubhouse. And they won't talk about that. And they talk about how great a guy's there, how big of leaders they are. I think they bring an arrogance that this team didn't need. And that's why they've taken off since he's gone.
Well, you tell me. That's an interesting point. The Royals always talk about, oh, we've got great leaders in the clubhouse. James Shields and Alex Gordon showed that he can step up and be a leader. Since he stepped up and said you got to look in the mirror, the Royals are what, 22-6 or something like that? It's crazy. And if they've got these leaders, then why are they looking to bring in guys like Raul Ibanez? Why do they need – they said they did not bring him in for his offense necessarily. They were talking about bringing him in for his leadership. And if they already have all these great leaders, why do they need more? All that tells me is there's problems in the clubhouse.
It's Mike Farron. There were. Mike Farron brought it up to us earlier in the year that they needed a guy. They needed a veteran presence. And it's no mistake that this team has kind of taken off. And it took off basically from that in-house meeting that they had. And I don't know who aired out who or what was said. Obviously, we'll never know. But things were said.
When Raul Ibanez writes his book.
Yeah. Things have been done differently. And there's different players in this house. And I don't know how you could differentiate from that at this point. Unless the Royals hit a little bit of a slide, I don't know how they could really look at things and say, yeah, we're gonna pump Eric Hosmer back at first base. A sane man wouldn't do it, I don't think.
No, and it's funny, too, because you see a lot of people on social media like, well, you can't move Infante out of the two spot because you can't mess with what's working. Would you put Eric Hosmer back in there? Absolutely. Well, hang on. You either can't mess with what's working or you can. I mean, it doesn't go both ways. And quite frankly, right now, I think the best combination at first base and DH, offensively and defensively, with a combination of the two, is Butler at first and Willingham at DH, rather than a cold Eric Hosmer coming back to play first with Billy Butler and Josh Willingham kind of splitting the DH role. I just don't see how the Royals get better that way. Billy Butler has shown competence at first base, and we didn't plan on talking about this, but I was listening to Serenan Petro the other day, and a guy called in and mentioned something about how Billy Butler just looks better than he used to and at first base, and it's a good point. I hadn't really thought about it. He's you'd expect him to regress because he hasn't played there in really for much since what, 2010, so it's been a long time, almost four full years since he played there regularly, and he's gone over there and he's looked better. And Petro's point was very interesting to me because he said, look, Billy Butler didn't get to develop defensively in the minor leagues. Billy Butler was a third baseman, and then when the Royals drafted Alex Gordon and they got on the same team and on the same development promotion path, Billy Butler went to left field. And if you'll recall, that's where he made his major league debut against the Angels as a left fielder. And I know that's comical to think about now, but the Royals thought he could be a Manny Ramirez type that just got by and his bat carried him. Well, obviously that didn't work out. He ended up going to first base, but he never really got to learn the position at a developmental level. He always had to play it in the major leagues, which is fine. And he turned out to be a slightly below to a little bit more than that below average first baseman. But since 2010, since being able to play there every day, he, from all accounts, he works there every game as a DH. He's out in the field during batting practice and taking ground balls and working on things. And truthfully, probably learning from a very good defensive first baseman in Eric Hosmer. And now you see him out there and you wonder, did he get his development time? I mean, he's 28 years old and he's not in nearly as bad shape as people think he is. I mean, you and I have both seen him in shorts and a t-shirt, and he's not tubby like people think he is. He's just a big dude. And he's out there and he's making plays and he's got great hands. He doesn't have the range of Eric Hosmer. There's no doubt about that. And there's no doubt that Eric Hosmer is better than Billy Butler. But maybe not playing first base over the last few years has actually helped him. And he was finally able to develop his glove skills. And now you see him out there and he's not bad.
No, he's not. And I've always thought it was overplayed. He's always had good hands. His feet aren't good. He's obviously not quick, but he's not out there tripping over himself. I always thought it was overplayed. I think first base defense is overplayed in general, and praising Eric Hosmer for his defense at first base is akin to praising the bat boy for his proper approach to running balls out to the ump. I mean, it's overplayed. I mean, your job is 90% to make picks. I mean, that's the reality of it. That's 90% of your job. Yeah, you can snag the liner down the line. That's great, but it isn't third base. It's not. There's no Scott Rowland. There's no Zimmerman over there. Nobody brags it up. I mean, the only guy that I've ever remember somebody being dazzled at first base defense was Doug Minkiewicz.
I remember Wally Joyner too, if you want to go back a little farther.
Yeah, that's a little bit, but I think a lot of Joyner's though was still his digging ability and his just great glove around the bag. I mean, and Billy, yeah, he's not those guys, but he's not bad. He's not bad. He's got good hands. And if he hits this much better, well then it's a no-brainer because he's a much better offensive player than Eric Hosmer's shown at this point in his career.
Yep, totally agree with you.
But this is a good time. Let's get to Nate Bucchetti, and then we'll hit you guys on the rebound.
We are now joined by Nate Bucchetti from Sports Radio 810 WHB. You know him from such shows as The Border Patrol and Baseball Tonight and probably others that I can't think of right now. Nate, how's it going?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thanks for taking some time to talk about the Red Hot Royals with us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
We are glad to have you. Let's dive right in. Royals are 69-55 as we record. I know that the win total holds a place near and dear to your heart at 69.
Yep. We have a very soft pork celebration about that every day, but we'll be happy to have them move past it, you know, on the Border Patrol. We'll find other reasons to work the number 69 into the broadcast, I'm sure.
I have no doubt about that. This is crazy because, a month ago, we had the Royals dead and buried, and now they are the favorites to win the division. What happened?
I mean, you guys can explain it as well as I can. They started doing everything right. You know, I don't know how. I don't know why. We were clearly premature if we did, in fact, bury this team. They did get really hot last year, and the difference was there wasn't the separation by teams like the Indians and the Tigers this time around, that if the Royals got hot like they did last year, and last year they were too far buried. This year, you know, really for a long time, the record was kind of right where it was last year. The difference was they weren't down in the standings, and now, you know, they have the 2-game lead. But the one big difference to me between last year and this year, as I see it, is, you know, really I think there's a narrative that the offense really picked it up in the second half of last season when George Brett took over, but the numbers don't really back that up. This offense really wasn't much better at all in the second half last year than the first half, but the pitching just got even better. And the pitching has done that again this year, but the offense really has gotten better. It's not a great offense now, but for the past month, it's been a slightly above average offense by major league standards, slugging percentage and on base percentage, speaking. So, you combine that with already really good defense and really good pitching and really good bullpen. They're just doing everything right, and they're beating good teams or beating bad teams. It's crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy. And they have we underestimated this front office? They said, I think about June or so, it came out that they thought that about July their team would kick in and then Tigers would start to fall. And it took a month extra, but now we're seeing the Tigers really come back to them. Is this to the front office? Do they need to get given credit for this as we see the Tigers start to fall off?
Well, absolutely. Look, I think that as a front office, you get credit for the things that work out, and you don't get and you get blamed for the things that don't work out. And they've certainly taken a lot of blame, you know, over the past 8 years. And look, I think some of it was warranted. You know, this has been a long building process, and they didn't necessarily get everything right along the way. But you know, it's working out the way that they kind of envisioned it right now. Not every single thing is working out the way that they did, but in terms of trying to build this team, you know, if you look at the way they've acquired all these players, there are success. I mean, look, the number one draft picks get criticized a lot, but if you look on the field, there are drafted players that are making a big difference on this team. There are international free agents like Salvador Perez and Yordano Ventura and Kelvin Herrera who are making a difference on this team. There are traded players that were traded as, you know, young players like Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar making a difference on this team. And there are players that they inherited from the past regime that they retained, like Billy Butler and Alex Gordon, making a difference. So, look, I always have felt that this regime has gotten too much criticism by a certain segment of the fan base, and it's probably our segment, guys, to be honest with you, even though I consider myself I'm not a statistician because I'm not smart enough to be one, but I believe in the approach. And I think that segment has been too critical of this regime because this regime doesn't do it the way that they would like to see it done. My stance for a long time has been, look, I would like to see it done that way too. I like the way that the A's go about their business. Billy Beane's teams have been better than the Royals every year since he's been the general manager, basically. But that doesn't mean it's the only way to do something. And I think sometimes, you know, we can be a little too dogmatic about things and say, well, they didn't do it the way we wanted to, so they don't know what the hell they're doing. And I think clearly they've taken a team that was god-awful back in 04, 05, 06, and they've turned it into at least a competitive baseball team, and they deserve credit for that.
You mentioned the drafted players, the former regime, and there's one topic that's kind of simmering in the Royals' world. It's what to do with Eric Hosmer when he comes back. And so I guess what I want to ask you is what you would do when Eric Hosmer comes back, assuming he does, and what the Royals will do, what you think the Royals will do.
Isn't that a tough question? I think what the Royals will do is they'll put him back at first base. Ned Yost has basically said that. We have seen that this organization is extremely loyal to Eric Hosmer. They believe that he is going to be the stud that he's been projected to be. And they believe in his defense at first base, which we all agree with on that front. The question is, does it disrupt the way things are going? This team has played its best baseball since he went on the disabled list. Not any of us, I don't think, are claiming that that's his fault, but Do you upset the apple cart if you put him back in there? My answer, though, is, you know, I'll wait and see. Let's see how close he gets to coming back. I mean, I still think it's going to be a while. And sometimes those issues have a tendency to sort themselves out. And look, I just kind of think that we're worried about something that is still a little bit down the road, because this guy still hadn't even started swinging program yet. And I don't want to sit here and say that I don't think he's going to come back this season, because I don't have any information on that. But I just look at a broken hand, a guy who hasn't swung a bat and isn't going to swing a bat at least for another week, and I think you at least have to start to question that a little bit. But what I would do, it's hard for me to answer that question. I would probably start to rotate players like him, Willingham, Billy Butler in those first base DH roles. I wouldn't just sit Billy all the time and never let him play first base again. I would let him play at least some over there. I don't know if it's once a week or whatever. To be honest with you, I don't think the Royals will do that. I think they'll go back to Eric Hosmer every day at first base, and Billy Butler will be the DH again.
Can you really afford, on a team that's built around defense, putting Ty Willingham in right field or Raul Ibanez back in right field? How can you do that, especially when Aoki's been so hot?
I don't know. I kind of felt that they were – I wasn't a fan of the idea of putting Raul Ibanez in the outfield in the first place. I realized that Aoki was not hitting at all, and they needed offense. But at the same time, like you said, by far one of the biggest strengths of this team is their outfield defense, and it complements their pitchers in a way that I still don't think most people appreciate. Everybody gives the credit to the pitchers, but they are pitching in wonderful circumstances, especially the ones that are fly ball pitchers.
because if it's a fly ball that doesn't go over the wall, those guys catch it. And you know, I don't like seeing them lose one of those strengths by going to somebody like that on the bench. So I don't know if that means that Willingham becomes a pitch hitter. I don't know if they work on some kind of rotation. You know, look, you're facing a left-handed pitcher. I just assume see Billy first base and Willingham as the DH and let Hosmer take the day off when he comes back. But once again, I don't know that we're going to see that.
Yeah, that's one of those things. Like you said, a lot of times that will work itself out. And what's interesting is if Hosmer waits too long, there's not going to be a minor league season to rehab in. So, you know, you look at that and I don't know how you put him back in there without having a game swing in a pennant race. Now you mentioned the defense. Oh, go ahead.
Well, one thing that I think I would imagine that they'll do is I think we can all see that they're looking to call up a couple of these young relief pitchers from the minor leagues in September when the rosters expand. And I could definitely see them doing a situation where they take a couple of those guys in a controlled environment and they get them out there and they have him pitch simulated at bats to try to get him up to speed. It's not the same as playing every day, like you said, in a rehab assignment, but that's probably going to have to be the final step to see if he's even ready for the timing of hitting big league pitching.
Yeah, that'll be the big story to watch probably, what, 2-3 weeks from now? Probably more like 3 or 4, actually. Now, you were talking about the defense, the outfield defense, and one guy obviously stands out, Alex Gordon. And the Fangraphs leaderboard has him at the top of wins above replacement. I think we can all agree he's not the best position player in all of baseball. Sorry to those who love him. I love him too. But
right.
If the Royals win the division, if the Royals make the playoffs, I mean, do you think he could finish in the top five in MVP voting?
I think you can make a strong case for it. I don't know that people have come that far around on the war stat to make that happen. You know, it might depend on what Alex's final month and, you know, plus a week or whatever consist of offensively. If he can get himself up close to 20 home runs, you know, some of those old fashioned numbers that at least have people recognize it a little bit. But you know, the thing that I look at, guys, is look, people laugh at the war stat. And some people are trying to use this as an example as to why so much stock should not be put in the war stat. And obviously, you know, Baseball Reference's war stat is very different in their evaluation of Alex Gordon because of the defense. But I like the stat. I'm not saying that it means everything to me. I mean, look, it's a tenth of a point difference. We're not talking about some big difference between he and Mike Trout right now. And it's all based on Alex's defense. But if you look at the other names on that list, look at the top 10, especially the top 8. I think Ben Zobrist is number 9. But if you look at the top 8, I mean, you're talking about Giancarlo Stanton and Andrew McCutchen and Josh Donaldson and Kyle Seager. You're talking about guys who are having great years. So, I mean, and there's not an exception in those top 8 where you go, well, what's that guy doing up there? So for Alex Gordon to be in that list, to me, the context of the list justifies the list a little bit here. You know what I mean? Like if there were 2 or 3 names that we didn't think belonged up there, then we'd say, well, that stat's garbage. But when all those names are up there, every single one of them, you'd be like, yeah, well, that guy's an MVP candidate. That guy's an MVP candidate. Are you going to tell me that Alex Gordon is the only player that is so misjudged by this stat that he's up there and doesn't belong to be up there? I feel like, yes, he is that good defensively that he belongs in the conversation.
Every night he makes an amazing play, it seems like. He makes an amazing throw. He covers so much ground out in left field. And it's just it's ridiculous. He's top to bottom, one of the top. You know, yeah, he might not be the 10th. He might not be the number one best player in the league, but he's got to be in the conversation for top 10 or 15, at least this year, when you round out everything into play. Where's Alex rank on the pantheon of Royals players the last 20 years? Is he Carlos Beltran and that's about it?
That's a great question. I mean, look, Mike Sweeney, what is the second leading hitter in Royals history? You got to throw him in there. Obviously he wasn't the defensive player that either Beltran or Alex Gordon is. Gordon's body of work here in Kansas City will end up probably better than Beltran's because he's been here longer. Look, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you got to say that he's put himself, especially if this team goes to the playoffs, at least one, if not more, you know, years while he's here. I'd say you got to put him in Royals Hall of Fame category. I mean, that might sound crazy, but you know, he's a two-time All-Star. I don't think he's going away from that. Now the reputation's out there. You know, and I'll say this again about the defense, guys. I mean, we watch him every day, and we appreciate it. But I really still don't think any of us in baseball – really appreciate defense on its fullest level, and that's one of the things that I appreciate about the Worstad and what you know people like the Fielding Bible and Fangraphs have tried to do in terms of trying to really quantify just how many runs you're saving. And you guys probably saw the Fangraphs piece that they wrote up a couple months ago about Alex, where they really quantified it from a standpoint of like how many times a guy hit a ball off the wall and stopped at first base because Alex Gordon was out there. And if you just took every one of those and added a double to Alex Gordon's ledger instead of a single offensively, how much better his offensive numbers would be? Well, it's the same thing. It's an extra base. You know, you're taking one away as opposed to getting one offensively. But I don't think we value it like that a lot of times. And we appreciate it, but I don't know that we value it because we don't feel like we have a number on it that we really trust that we can put on there like we do the offensive numbers. And, I mean, we watch, like you said, we watch him every day. He doesn't just make terrific plays. He makes all the plays. And he gets to every ball quickly to take runners away. He makes great throws. He's fantastic.
Does he challenge Frank when it's all said and done with the gold gloves? I mean, he's probably going to get his fourth this year.
What's Alex, about 30? I can't remember.
I think he's 30.
Right
at 30.
You know, he's on that kind of roll, and he takes care of himself well enough that maybe he can get five more, you know. And gold glove is obviously, we know, one of those things that becomes about reputation. And let's be honest, I mean – he's benefited by the fact that he plays a position that is not typically thought of as a defensive position. I mean, you don't typically put your best fielder out in left field. I usually think of left field being the place where your worst defensive outfielder is, but not that that's always the case, but he's probably benefited by that because the competition there isn't as great. And now that they've split it up between the three outfield spots, maybe he will if he stays healthy.
You harked back to 04, 05, 06. You followed those teams. What's it like for you, the fan, to watch this team?
Well, there's a part of me shaking my head going, yeah, of course I traveled with the team back when they lost 100 games every year. You know? And, now I don't, you know, that would be my luck. But, at the same time, it's kind of perfect for me because I have a 4.5-year-old son now. I kind of wish he was maybe a year or two older so he'd actually really appreciate it. You guys know what it's like, but you know, now my son and I get to watch parts of games together. I can't usually keep his interest for an entire 9-inning baseball game, but you know, we watch the games. He's got a favorite player. It's Billy Butler, by the way. And we go out in the driveway and we play, and he doesn't know what it's like though for the three of us and everybody else in town who have stuck with this team for so long. The reward for those of us that have been lifelong Royals fans is going to be so much greater than anybody that just kind of jumped on the bandwagon. And I'll welcome anybody that wants to jump on the bandwagon, have as much fun as you want, because there's no possible way you can enjoy it as much as we can, because it just, like, you guys know, you know what it means. I mean, it's fun. I hope we get to see it out, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm with you completely. I couldn't say it better myself. I hope this isn't our only chance, but if it is, I think all three of us are going to enjoy it a lot.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Every minute.
Well, we know you have to get running, so we'll let you go. Thank you so much for taking some time with us, and we'll do it again soon.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
From Nate, let's bounce right into my interviews with Christian Benford and Mark Nassar of the Omaha Punchers. A minor league spin, and we're here with Mark Nassar, broadcaster for the Omaha Storm Chasers. Mark, a little bit different club than the last few years, a little bit less heralded names, but same old, still in first place. How do you compare those teams to the last few years?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Clint. I mean, the first year, I think more people in Kansas City were excited about what was going on with the Omaha Storm Chasers at the time in 2011 than they are now. And that's a good thing now that fans are more excited about what's going on at the big league level. But you're right, just a lot more prospects initially with, you know, the Hosmers, the Moustakases, and even, you know, the following year with Will Myers and Jake Odorizzi. This year's team, a lot more free agents, but for whatever reason, they seem to have fallen in line, and you know, somehow, some way, again, the Storm Chasers are just kind of finding a way to be very competitive. You know, last year's team that won the AAA National Championship, even though the team finished under 500. You could see the team doing well just because the pitching was so darn good last year. This year, it's just kind of a variety of reasons that we're doing well. We're not pointing to just one thing. So I think it's just a little bit of everything this year. And, you know, 2 weeks left in the season, still a lot can happen. It did last year in the final 2 weeks of the season. But right now, being two games up with 15 left to play as we speak here, you know, the Storm Chasers are kind of sitting pretty.
One big difference in this year's team is a difference in manager, Brian Pohlberg, as opposed to Mike Gerschle, who's here for 15 years or so.
Yep.
What's the difference you've seen in the, in their management styles, if anything?
You know, honestly, not much. I mean, Gersh and Poli are kind of, you know, spun from the same cloth. You know, they're both first and foremost developmental guys, organizational guys, meaning they're going to do whatever the organization wants to help develop big league players first and foremost. Yes, they want to win. They're both very competitive people that way. You know, they both have been in the organization a very long time. Poli is now, you know, 28 years and counting as just a player, coach, or manager and instructor in this league or in this organization. And, you know, Gersh was the same way. You know, I think Poli being new to the league, new to AAA, he hadn't been a manager at this level before. You know, I'm sure there was some adjustment for him that way, just dealing with the more veteran player. He's been at the AA level for the last 6 years, where typically those guys are more sort of up and coming. You know, at the AAA level, you got a little bit of everything. You know, you got prospects, suspects, and has-beens, and so, you know, it's a little more difficult to sort of massage the egos at this level. But you know what? I think he's done a good job of that. You know, the guys play hard for him. I think that's a really big thing that, you know, kind of goes unnoticed at the AAA level. And, you know, right now, I think he's trying to do all that he can to get this team another divisional title. You know, he's from this area. I think he won't say that to you or to me or to anyone else, but you know what? You know, he's from here. He's well-known in this area. I think he wants to, you know, to bring a divisional title and have the sort of success that the club has had the past few years.
You talk about prospect or suspect. One player that has actually taken off since he's been here is Whit Merrifield. What have you seen of him, and what do you think he is?
You know, he's, number one, a lot of fun to watch. You know, typically when we get utility players up from the AAA level, okay, maybe one or two guys will have a hot stretch to start. And you know what? We had that. And I honestly, and you know, I'll admit it, I thought, you know, it's going to be a matter of time before Whit kind of comes back to earth. And we haven't seen that. And, you know, and that's in large part to him. You know, he just brings a sense of confidence. And, you know, typically when you have a new guy at the AAA level, they're kind of, they have that deer in the headlights look. You know, they're trying to get comfortable. You know, it's a very different animal for any other level, much like when you go to the big leagues. That's a whole other animal. But you know what? He just seemed to be very comfortable right from the start. And, you know, his approach to hitting is very good. He's not strictly a pull hitter. He's not strictly an opposite field hitter. He uses the entire field. You know, could he stand a walk a time or two? Tommy Gregg and I have talked about that on the air. And he says most definitely, you know, he'd like to see Whit, you know, maybe a little more patient, especially since he's at the very top of the batting order. But at the same time, dude's hitting 370. It's hard to change a guy when he's going that well. And, you know, it's just been a lot of fun to watch, you know, now over, shoot, over a 10-week stretch.
A little bit different feel for the year. The Royals in first place on August 18th. I know they haven't been in this position since you've been with the Omaha Club. So what is your anticipation for the players the rest of the season and seeing players come and go and roster moves here and there? What do you feel?
You know, I think there's been sort of a surprising stability at this level, just because we've seen Dayton Moore really over the last 4 to 6 weeks kind of stick with going out and finding the veteran player, you know, the Ibanez's, the Downs, the Jason Frazier's. And so that has really sort of made things sort of stable here. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, the Omaha Storm Chasers have had the success that they've had, just because there hasn't been a great deal of movement to the big league level. But at the same time, you know, guys know. They're paying attention. They understand the excitement that's going on in Kansas City. And I think that, along with the pennant race that they're currently in, you know, kind of injects a little adrenaline in them that, you know, some ordinary teams might not get, you know, when you know, a team's out of the race, both at the big league level and at the AAA level. It can be kind of hard to find things to sort of motivate you, and I don't think that's the case at all at this level with what's going on in Kansas City and what's going on here.
So what's your final prediction? You think the Royals will win the division or not?
Man, you're tough. You know, honestly, I really feel like yes, and you know, my rationale is it's a combination of the way the Royals are playing, the way their schedule is set up. It's very kind to them, you know, over the final 6 weeks of the season. And I just think that also, you know, the Tigers, they have shown the ability to get hot, you know, time and time again. But, boy, you look at their rotation right now. It's a little bit in disarray with Sanchez hurt and Verlander, the uncertainty with him. And then the bullpen is just a wreck right now. You know, so it makes me think that this is the year. You know, I was around for 2003, and you know, you could see that slipping away a long time before it actually happened. You know, I mean, you know, you're only going to get so many quality starts from a Ronaldis Hernandez or a Jose Lima. But you know what? With this starting rotation, you know, just giving six innings, that's all that's necessary with that lights out bullpen and, you know, Herrera, Davis, and Holland. You know, they've really shortened the game, and the offense is starting to come around now, which gives you even more hope. So, yes, I'm going to say the Kansas City Royals are going to win a division in 2014.
You're an East Coast kid. Were you a fan of Bobby?
Oh, everybody knows his name, but you know, I never got to meet him or anything like that.
Okay. What's pitches? 89, 91 fastball. What is the a slider that you're throwing, the breaking ball?
Yeah, I throw slider, I throw curveball, I throw changeup, I throw everything. But I just try to pour it in for strikes.
What's the, I guess, have they talked to you about what the plan is here? Are you going to work with Zimmer? They talked about he's going to throw yesterday and then 2 days off and then throw again. Is that the same plan with you?
I have no idea. I really do not know. I honestly, you know, this is all a surprise to even be here right now. So I'm just trying to take it a day at a time. I asked him, I didn't even know I was going to relieve until I got here. So I had no idea what was going to happen, but you know, I'll go out there and do my best every time.
So you haven't relieved in a minor league game, but you've obviously worked on short outings in Arizona and other spots. So what do you do for preparation?
Well, I've never relieved in the middle of a game. So it may be short outings, but I start the same routine as normal. So it's, you know, I'm going to have to get that down quick. I'm going to have to learn. And, I mean, it's just, if I get into a clean inning, you know, I got to go out with the same mindset. So that's really the plan.
Can you reach back and go find more velocity now if you're in a shorter outing, or is that just not on your mind?
I mean, I'm sure I could. I'm sure there's something in there. I mean, I've hit 93, 94 every game that I've thrown, so, I mean, it's not like it's not there. I just, starting, I have a routine of going later in the game, then letting it all out, you know, later innings. So here it's gonna be different. I'm gonna have to figure out how to maybe tap into that a little bit earlier.
And obviously you don't start a season with goals, but you got to be way ahead of what you expected at this point.
Leaps and bounds ahead. You know, I'm just, it's awesome to play with these guys. You know, you see all these guys who were drafted a long time before me, and, you know, catching up to them is kind of cool, but now I get to learn from them too. So I'm just excited to meet everybody, and you know, pain is awesome, and I'm learning, you know, how to attack hitters, and, you know, it's a different level. They have a different mindset at the plate, and, you know, it's going to be a little bit different, but I'll just keep the ball down and do my best.
Good stuff from Binford and Mark Nassar talking Omaha Royals. And one thing that's really interested me, Clint, is Binford's promotion. Obviously, he'll be working in relief, and I look at it, as many others do, as he's kind of replacing Jason Adam in their plans for September. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, that's got to be how you see it, and it's all hands on deck, and as interesting as that is, it's like, I want to see, are they going to make a push for Kyle Zimmer to make a move up there? And you see them, they're doing this with quite a few guys, Binford, Sam Selman, Finnegan. That's about, I think those are the three guys mainly that they're doing it with. And Selman, it hasn't worked really. Yeah, he got off to a good start at AA at a relief, but I watched him last night just get rocked. He was not good. He was a bad impersonation of Donnie Joseph. That's not good.
No.
And but Christian Benford's a totally different animal than those guys we mentioned. Finnegan, I think, is a pretty good. He's got very good control. I don't know if he's got the lights out, like bullpen fastball, I guess. I like all these guys. I'm not a big Sam Selman fan, but I think Kyle Zimmer's the only guy I could see who could actually make some hay if the Royals needed him. I think Christian Benford could get outs, but I think right now as it stands, I think Zimmer, if he would make a push, which I'm not counting on, would be the only guy that could actually do some damage.
I think Finnegan could be good against lefties.
Yeah.
He's got some deception there, and I think that a big leaguer who's never seen him, and there's not a whole lot of a book on him, I think that could be beneficial down the stretch. But I see what you're saying. I think Zimmer's the only one with the classic stuff that plays up so much in the bullpen that he's dominant. I mean, was he at 97 in his first outing in Idaho Falls?
Yeah, 97-98. Piccolo said on.
And as a starter, he was sitting 93, 94, 95 mostly, getting up there a little bit, but not.
He was hitting triple digits late in the year.
But I'm saying where he sat was in the low. Yeah. It was in the mid 90s.
Yeah, it was about 95, 96 most nights.
Okay.
Yeah, it was at the end of the year. It was electric stuff. I mean, it was crazy. The guy was ready at the end of the year, and then he ran into all these problems. It's Finnegan, I guess he could prank a good Tim Collins impersonation, probably. That's kind of what you see with the guy. I watched him get rocked the other night at Northwest Arkansas's breaking ball. He just didn't have it that night, and he left a couple just loopy, soft little hangers up there, and they got nailed. And he had some bad defense behind him. Hunter Dozier made back-to-back errors. So that can affect the guy. I guess the Binford won't. He's not going to light up the gun. Like last night when I saw him, he was 89-91. But he's attacking the zone. He's hitting his spots. He's making guys miss. He's moving the ball around. The breaking ball was decent. I'll have to see more of him at AAA because that's the first look. Let's see what guys see. You know, as the league kind of adapts to him, they're not going to have much time to adapt, but he attacked some guys. You know, he attacked, he struck out Bobby Abreu, who's like 20 years older than him. I mean, how crazy is that? It was just nuts. I mean, he got three Ks in two innings, and of course he didn't walk a batter because he doesn't walk anybody. And he gave up one little bloop single to Anthony Seritelli. So
the thing to me about Benford is I get what they're doing, and I get they want to have as many arms as possible for the push in a couple weeks. But I just don't see – I mean, if Benford's going to succeed, it's got to be as a starter, right? He just doesn't have the stuff to play up in the bullpen other than as a long reliever. I mean, yeah, I could see him as kind of the Bruce Chen type in a couple years. But as of right now, he's not a short reliever. You're not going to get a big strikeout from him, right?
You're not going to get big strikeouts, I don't think, but you're going to get some ground balls. And he's not 89 to 91 typically. I mean, yeah, that's where he sits most of the time, but he hits 93 in pretty much every start. So I think he's got more in the tank. I think he can hit 95. He's hit it in the past in like Arizona and stuff like that. He can find more, but I just don't know if that's his game, if he would look to go find more.
Mm-hmm.
He's just very within himself, and there's so much plane on that ball. I mean, you're talking a 6'6" overhand guy. There's a lot of plane there, and he has no problem hitting the bottom half of the zone, which for most guys at height, that's very difficult, but he has no problem with it. So I guess if you need a guy to go out and get you a ground ball, he might be that guy if you have that situation, which in September you might run into that. Might get into the fifth or sixth inning where...
Well, you know, we've seen situations where Aaron Crow is called on for that, and Aaron Crow is, well, not especially good anymore. And yeah, maybe Christian Benford can come in and runner on first and one out, and you just have to get this inning over. Maybe that's not a bad place for him.
No. It's interesting that's one of the guys that they decided to play that with. I guess he's not ideally who I would decide either. He's
mm-hmm.
Jason Adams made sense. Jason's been in the upper 90s before.
Right. He's a hard thrower. He's got that heavy fastball that in one inning stints, I think, could really make him look really good.
Yeah, and Benford's not that. But it's all hands on deck right now. It's so I got to give him props. And who knows, you know, who's your sixth starter is the other thing you got to ask. I guess Bruce Chen's your sixth. Who's your seventh? I mean, it's not Aaron Brooks. I think it's Christian Benford. There's nobody else in AAA. I mean, John Lamb got rocked tonight in an inning and two-thirds for six runs. He had a bad start.
I think if you have a sixth or a seventh starter, it's a bullpen game.
Yeah, I think that's where I give it to Benford. I give him the ball and say, here, this late in the year, we can't. I mean, what are we going to do? We're going to give it the bullpen all night. If Ventura goes down for a game or two and Chin's not available or something like that, then you got to call up somebody. They've done it with Aaron Brooks, and that's not ideal, obviously, this time of year. You're going to need to call up somebody. I guess I'd kick somebody off the 40 and give Benford the ball is what I would do.
Yeah, I think you go him. That's a great question because, another name. Liam Hendricks might be the guy.
Yeah, that might be, I guess.
Actually, you know what? I think he probably is the guy.
He's probably.
Now that I'm thinking about it, if Ventura is out or he gets hurt and Chen can't go, I do think it's going to be Liam Hendricks.
Is he on the 40?
Yeah, he is.
Okay. So, yeah. That's probably... So you don't have to make a roster move. That would be the move. I don't know, though. I'd probably still give the ball to Benford.
I probably would, too, but I think the Royals would probably say Liam Hendricks is the guy. We traded for him. He's got this and this and this. And he got experience and blah, blah, blah. What's interesting to me is the Royals, I mean, I wrote about this. They're probably going to add some players to their big league roster in September who aren't on the 40-man. And so you look around, and they obviously have more than a candidate or two to be knocked off the 40-man. But I think in a couple weeks you could see Aaron Brooks off the 40-man. You could see Scott Downs potentially off the 40-man if he doesn't come back from the disabled list in reasonable time. Chris Dwyer, maybe. Blake Wood, potentially. Michael Marriott has a chance to be kicked off. Johnny Giovitella is another guy. I think.
Yeah, Royals, I think you have to.
I think they've said they're done with him, and you know, he hasn't done anything, and I hate that. But I don't. I think the Royals. I don't see what they're going to do with him in September. So I could see him being removed from the 40-man roster to make room for Brandon Finnegan, Christian Benford, Kyle Zimmer, even.
Yeah, I think Giovitella is as good as gone from the 40. I'd be shocked if he survived it, especially the way Christian Colon's played and how the organization likes Colon. Mm-hmm. You know, Liam Hendricks is a guy that they could knock off, even though we said he's a possible call-up.
I think Brooks is the guy before Hendricks, and I think
Well,
I mean, they've got options before Hendricks, Blake Wood, Aaron Brooks.
There's guys
Chris,
in front of
I think Chris Dwyer is probably less likely to stay on the roster than Liam Hendricks.
No. There's guys in front of Brooks. But I think Brooks would be one of the last guys to fall off.
Maybe.
They like him. They like him. And
do they still, though?
Well, it's his first year at AAA. I mean, how can you hate the guy already? I mean, they stuck it out with Nate Adcock and some other guys. And there's other guys in front of him, though, is what I'm saying. There's plenty of guys in front of him that would be knocked up. I like the guys I see that are on the 40 that are going to come up in September. Casey Coleman's probably coming up in September.
I would imagine the brothers Coleman and Tim Collins are up.
I don't know about Lewis. I mean, he just hasn't looked good. I mean, even last night he got one.
Yeah.
He just hasn't pitched that well, and even in Omaha he hasn't pitched that well. So I wouldn't guarantee. I mean, he's a good specialty guy. Used correctly, go get a righty out. I would like to have that guy on my team. But, and I'd say Giovitella is pretty much a lock to get knocked off that 40.
See, if I'm the Royals, though, I think any reliever on the 40-man is up in September because maybe you don't pitch him at all. But it's nice to have in a game. Yeah, maybe the Royals are up 10-0 or 10-2. Or they're down 10-2. Why pitch anybody who matters?
No, that's true. That's true. But you're not going to probably see Tim Collins. He's got a bad back. I'd be surprised if he makes it back up. I mean, he's not pitching right now. So you probably don't see him. So a guy like Benford who can give you a couple innings in a game you're talking about, he's a valuable asset. He's going to be on the 40 next year anyway because, to be honest with you, he's going to be in the mix for that fifth starter if they don't go out and sign a free agent.
Yeah, it's going to be him.
It's going to be him, Kyle Zimmer, if he's healthy.
Have to see how he does in winter ball
Zimmer
to determine if he's going to be in the mix for opening day.
Yeah, and Brandon Finnegan.
Finnegan's going to have a shot, and I think if Aaron Brooks is still on the 40-man, he'll be in the mix, but not really in the mix. And they'll inevitably bring in a Brett Tomko type.
Yeah.
Who won't really be in the mix either. But the next year's rotation could skew really young, and I would say that I wouldn't be terribly, terribly surprised if the Royals shop Jeremy Guthrie this offseason.
I don't think there's any chance that they shop Guthrie not knowing where Kyle Zimmer's at.
Here's why I say that. They were pretty – I mean, this Royals organization doesn't let a whole lot leak, and it was not exactly quiet that they weren't 100% sold on Jeremy Guthrie in the rotation. That's why they went out – and that's why they were looking at some of those starters on the market. They didn't obviously get any of them. And I think they kind of knew that Guthrie was going to revert back to being average instead of terrible like he was in July. But I'm not sure the Royals are 100% sold on Jeremy Guthrie based on that. Now, I don't know if they're going to find a taker. But if the Royals are able to do that, if the Royals are able to trade Jeremy Guthrie, well, that might allow them to go out and get another starter in free agency. And maybe there's a team that values the veteran presence more. But and then maybe the Royals go out and get a Jason Hamill. He struggled in Oakland, knocked his price tag down. I could see that being a savvy move. And then being able to ease in another guy and not have two fifth starters with a young guy and Jeremy Guthrie, if that makes sense.
I just don't know how they're going to... If attendance makes a big, sharp spike... And it's got to, what, average like 27 to get to 2 million?
I think it might be more like 28 now because they had a
down couple of games.
Midweek games, day games make it tough.
Yeah, so they're gonna.
They've got nine weekend home dates left, so I think there's a pretty good shot they get to $2 million if they, as long as they stay in this race, and they will.
That's the only way I can see them pulling off a move like you're talking about. Otherwise, they're gonna be up against the payroll so hard. Because as much as we want to say that they could make a move with Hosmer, they're not gonna.
No, they're not going. But I'm saying.
And so you're really
guaranteed to get traded. But I'm saying they will look. They will look and see if there's a team. And a team like the Giants, they're not the team that I think necessarily would trade for him, but there are teams out there who will value a steady veteran presence like Guthrie. For a team with a heftier payroll, Jeremy Guthrie's salary isn't that prohibitive.
Yeah, but the problem with that whole notion, David, is the heavy veteran presence is going to be needed now with the loss of James Shields.
That's a good point.
They're not going to give up on.
Might say that they can't get rid of Guthrie because of that.
I would be hard pressed to see them. As much as I would love it, I'd be very hard pressed for them to go into next season with a very young rotation and a starter that they don't know. Now, could that happen if James Shields is somehow brought back? Yeah, I could see that then.
Well, sure, if that happened, but I don't think that's even worth talking about.
Yeah, they waved goodbye to Billy Butler. I'm just saying, if they waved goodbye to Billy Butler, they were able to move Guthrie in some kind of trade to alleviate payroll, make some other moves on payroll to save money, and bring back Shields, then I could see them doing that. But I don't. That's a very, very unlikely scenario.
My thing is, and you hear this a lot, Danny Duffy and James Shields have become, I mean, they were already kind of two of the same, but you wonder if the Royals see, okay, James Shields has rubbed off on Danny Duffy. He's that guy now. I think that's possible. And I'm not saying that any of this is something that I expect to happen. I think these are just moves that could possibly happen. And it you know, I mean, we got 6 weeks left in a very exciting season, so I don't want to put the cart ahead of the horse here, but I think it could be a really fun offseason too.
Oh, I think it could be a really fun offseason. I think it's going to be a fun Arizona and Winter League ball because I think Kyle Zimmer could put himself into the mix. If Zimmer goes out and has a good Arizona Fall League and then maybe pitches a few innings in Winter Ball, I think he's going to put himself in the mix for that starting spot.
No, I think you're right.
And, I mean, they were all pumped and ready and jacked up to have him at the end of the season. And
yeah,
things went haywire.
I think if things had gone according to plan,
he'd be in the rotation already.
He'd be in the rotation. I think there's a decent chance that Bruce Chen is off this team and Jeremy Guthrie's the long reliever for the rest of the year.
Oh, that's exactly right. But now with the spot with Shieldsy going away, it's going to be a tough move. The real interesting part to me is not as much the pitchers, because I think they're going to need Casey Coleman. They're going to need some relievers. Benford's probably going to fill a need there. Maybe Finnegan. That would be exciting. But what they're going to do with bats, I mean, Carlos Peguero's killing it. The guy's not probably a long-term plan in the organization's future. Are you going to free up a spot for him? Well, you got to free up two or three spots for pitchers. Who else are you going to free up a spot for a guy like that? Do you just say, no, we're not even going to mess with it. We're going to stick with Ibanez. I don't know. That's an interesting move for them. Lane Adams, if he wouldn't have ran into that injury, he'd probably be that guy. But ran into that injury. He's on the 40. You don't probably want to lose him off the 40. They got some interesting moves offensively, too, that are going to take some massaging. I think, who was it in McAuliffe's article? He had Giavitella going away. He had Scott Downs. He had Aaron Brooks. Who were the other two guys that he had? I think he had maybe Collins getting to DL or something like that. So
yeah, could have been Collins. I mean, it's the guys we talked about. I think Marriott was on his list, too.
Yeah, so it's going to be so interesting down the stretch with these moves and how they've never been in this spot. It's been since 1985 where they had to really worry about this. It's actually probably, 89 or not even 89.
No, they didn't really have a chance in 89 because the A's were so good.
Yeah,
I think 90, it was
in 94 the season got cut off before.
By the time September call-ups came around, the last time the Royals were relevant in the playoff race, truly relevant,
85
was probably 85.
Wow, that's nuts.
I mean, you look up and down. There's only been 2 years since the strike that you could even consider. It's last year in 03. But last year, they were just kind of hanging around and not really making real noise. And in 2003, they were falling out of it by September.
Yeah, they were making moves, but it was just to try to salvage anything they could.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's funny, in 2003, I think the moves were trying to get that 500 season to lock Sweeney up through 2007.
Yeah, that's...
If you recall, because his contract was if they didn't finish over 500 in 2003 or 2004, that he could become a free agent after the 2004 season.
Yep. Yep, it's just nuts. It's
yeah, this is crazy. And like I said, they could be in first place all alone later this year than any season since 1985 in just a couple days.
Oh, I know. I look at that every day. I look at their comparisons, and then last night we got to August 9th of 1994. It was the last time they were 14 games over 500.
Mm-hmm.
This season, hey. I don't know why I'm so amazed. I mean, I called it going in. You were the one that should be amazed, Dave. I said 92 wins and a wild card.
You did. I said 86 wins and missing the playoffs.
Yeah. So I don't know why I'm so far. It's just fun, I guess. It's just so fun to watch. It's fun to watch this
because, you know,
play.
What? Expectations change as the season goes on.
Yeah.
And
oh.
When the Royals are, what were they, 4-7 early, you think, oh, God. But then they came back and they rebounded. Then when they're 24 and 28, you go, and just coming off a sweep of the Houston Astros, by the Houston Astros, you go, well, this season's a wash. And they went 10 in a row, and you're like, okay, well, they're in first place. Let's place a World Series bet, Danny Parkins. And then they falter again, and they're 48 and 50, and you're going, all right, 98 games in, this is what this team is. This is not a playoff team. This is another failure, all that, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, what do? They go 21-5. I mean, come on!
It's unbelievable. It's unreal. It's 2 years in a row they're finishing strong like this, and even but last year it's coming up and down. Even I mean, even when they got kicked in, they fell back, and maybe they're going to do that a little bit. But I think they've got the pieces that they've added. Josh Willingham is a big addition that makes you think that. Wow, this team can really go.
Well, the pitching staff is better, too. I mean, last year's starting rotation really went too deep and then potentially more at times. This year's rotation goes four deep with starters that you really feel like you can count on every single time out.
Yeah, and how amazing is it? We went into the season going, well, they're not going to have a Lou coach. And now not only do they not have that, they got something better in Wade Davis.
Yep.
How is it? That's the sun shining down on you big time, because we looked at Hoke's year last year and we were just like, that was just an amazing season. You just can't look at it. I mean, you're not going to find a 1.34 what ERA, whatever he put up. Yeah.
Well, you were right.
Yeah, we were right. You're not going to find that. You're going to find a half a run better.
No, he was 1.8, so you found a full run better.
Wow. I mean, nuts. That's just crazy. It's just crazy. And Kelvin Herrera has found himself, and as I've tweeted out, he and Wade Davis are just the second and third Royals relievers ever to get to 50 games without giving up a home run.
It's insane, and you know, it's funny because the Royals' seventh inning guy is a closer on probably 15 teams.
Oh, yeah.
The Royals' eighth inning guy is a closer on probably 27 teams.
Yeah. It's nuts.
And their ninth inning guy is a closer on 28 teams. I think the only closers you take over him right now are Chapman and Kimbrel, and maybe not even Chapman. He had some command issues going on lately.
Yeah, I mean, there's nights where I'm like, oh, man, I mean, this game's over. It's the sixth inning.
There's nights, and well, okay, Greg Holland, I think he is one of the top three or four closers in all of baseball, obviously. As good as he is, there are nights that I almost think, yeah, just Davis in for second inning. give Holland the rest of the night off.
I've said it. I wrote about it. I wish they would have. You can't do it now, but I wish they would have let Wade Davis close some games.
I think so too.
Just because I would.
Funny, real quick. If you're watching the game, or if you're listening to this and you watched the game last night, my dad just sent me the text of the year, which, knowing my dad, probably took him 3 hours to compose. But he says, "Is that Ron Gardenhire in the powder blue Royals shirt sitting in the front row, just to the first base side of home plate?" I know you're listening after the fact, but if you watch the game tonight, because this podcast will be posted on Wednesday, I'm guessing this guy will still be there, and he does look like Ron Gardenhire. Just had to throw that in there.
Yeah, there's nights that you're just like, well, the Royals are taking out their best reliever to get to Greg Holland. And Greg Holland's no slouch.
No, Greg Holland is better for Wade Davis. I trust Greg Holland in the long run more than Wade Davis, yeah. But I mean, just because he's done it, it's not a matter. I don't know that Greg Holland's necessarily better. It's just the comfort level. But there are definitely nights that I say, just leave Davis out for a second inning. Greg can wait.
Yep, I wish they would have tried it, because come contract time next year, then that's where they're going to have to make a decision. But I think we've rambled on long enough, Dave.
Yeah, I even included a text from my dad. He'll be happy.
Yeah. So, but let's get to it. We'll get to you guys next week.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.